Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talk about supergroups.
You mean bands that fight crime? What a great topic.
Patrick, how many of those beers have you had?
72.
Patrick, we are at Mike Snyder's
house.
Yes,
we are. It's such a nice place.
I want to tell the listeners what a great trick this is that we have somehow managed to pull off, right? So Mike is a friend of ours, goes back several years now, right? Mm-hmm. And we enjoy spending time with Mike.
Always.
Whether it's on the podcast or not, just, you know, and Mike and I went to a Wilco show recently together. Thank you for inviting me to that. He's got the Wilco t-shirt on right now.
Or if it's riding in a pickup truck and a trailer all the way down to Texas.
That's right. We've done things like that. But we didn't ask him to do this, but he supports us on Patreon.
Yes.
Right?
It's amazing.
And we're grateful for that.
Extremely.
Right? You know, it's very nice. But then, as part of the deal with the Patreon, he gets to come on and pick the topic and do shows. And he also like has us over to his house to do that, right? That's a good trick that we managed
really
to
good. I don't know how he did it, but it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm always glad to have you guys. And actually, this in this case, is easier for me to not travel.
Well,
so
yeah.
Yes.
But it'll be fun.
Yes.
All right. So this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And as I mentioned, we have with us
Mike Snyder.
And we love Mike's setup here.
Yes.
We always talk about that.
We do.
This is where we would prefer probably to live, right?
Yeah,
if we
could pretty much.
Just stay here.
I would like to live down here, too.
He's got this big screen TV.
Oh,
it's
unbelievable.
We got college football on right now.
Yep.
He's got just a ton of like records and really impressed with like the number of box sets and that kind of stuff.
Every time we come, there's a new one. I've been spying the Abbey Road box set over there.
I'm a bit of a completist in some cases.
Yeah.
And what you don't see, which my wife conveniently got these shelves made, I hide about 5,000 CDs in the lower levels.
Right. So that's the key secret, when you find out where those are.
Because unlike many of you guys' fans, I kind of gave up on vinyl quite a while ago. I have, as you see, a few there. And Patrick, you got me a couple. And I've done some record store day stuff. So I enjoy it, but it's not convenient for me.
Right. And with your setup, too, where would you set up a turntable and have all the wires and stuff?
The PlayStation 4 doesn't work with vinyl. So
And we should say a quick shout out to Julie. She's been going through a couple of health challenges, and so everybody should send the lovely Julie Snyder some good vibes.
Yes,
Julie.
Yes, good vibes. Bring it on. The other thing we like about coming over to Mike's house is he always has interest in beer.
Oh yes,
right?
He does. So, well, it's funny. I'm sorry, Jim. Today Mike was like, "I haven't had time to go to the store. We're just gonna have to do the randos." And we looked in the fridge, and it was like, this random selection of Mike's is way better than what I get when I go to the store and buy beer. So, it's amazing.
Lately, my wife is, as you said, has had some health problems. So, Mike's medicine is kind of a varied type of dosage also. So
that's right. Luckily, you're an expert physician and you can prescribe yourself just what you need.
Exactly. So, what you're having here, Jim, is a new salt lime lager from
very
Stone.
Tasty.
It's very good. It's a nice kickoff. It's 4.7% alcohol. So, you can have it and kind of burn it off by talking, basically. Patrick's having a Ghost Hammer IPA, also from Stone.
Very nice.
And I have a Pumpkin Ale from Dogfish Head going here. So,
and if any of the listeners have not listened to that time we did Beer Week here at Mike's house,
absolutely,
where we went through a different band branded beers.
That was fantastic.
That was really fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a good time. That was a long week.
It's the only time I've ever fallen up the stairs.
That's right. Okay, but the topic today is of Mike's choosing, and what did you pick for us, Mike?
Well, I wanted to talk about supergroups, and came up with this idea, you know, almost 2 months ago because the High Women album was coming out, and I'd been listening to the early tracks, and I kind of started thinking, you know, obviously they're, depending on how we define them, they're kind of a supergroup. And I started making me think about supergroups in the past and ones I've liked and some maybe I didn't like as much. And unfortunately, we couldn't get together until now. The album's been out for about 6 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
think folks have probably heard it, but it's still a good, fun discussion to get into, you know. So this band, you know, has the woman I know most is Maren Morris, is kind of more of a pop almost musician.
Right.
But I've, you know, the other women include Brandi Carlile, mm-hmm. who I know her name. Mm-hmm. I haven't listened to her a lot. Amanda Shires, who I know as kind of an Americana artist, and then she married Jason Isbell.
Right.
And then I had not heard of Natalie Hinby, but we could talk more about her as we go along. But this album was a real fun listen. But it also has some, took some serious tacks to it. But it's a, I think it's a great listen. I don't know if you guys have listened to any of it. I listened to it quite a bit when it came out, and then the last few weeks I haven't, and then I listened to some today to kind of freshen it up. And it mm-hmm. still sounds great.
Yep, absolutely. I had not, it wasn't even on my radar until Jim pointed it out. So I was glad for that, and I have listened to it a couple times.
It's a really interesting project.
It
I
really
like the
is.
Fact that it's a take on the Highwaymen, yep. which of course was a famous super group,
mm-hmm.
and they're sort of claiming it now for women, right?
Owning
exactly. I think that's great.
Yeah, I think what I read was that Amanda Shires was out on tour a year or so ago and realized women weren't getting played on country radio.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of started talking to other musicians, and I think she'd done a show with Brandi Carlile or something, and Brandi has a lot of sway right now, and they kind of all got collected. And interestingly, you know, the Highwaymen, the first song is actually just a rewrite of the Highwaymen song written by Jimmy Webb that the Highwaymen, the Johnny yeah. Cash, the Waylon Jennings, the Kris Kristofferson, and Willie Nelson band sang. So it's really kind of a passing of the of
right.
the legend on.
Want to hear a little bit of that?
That sounds good to me. Right. Let's hear it.
I was a high woman and a mother from my youth. For my children, I did what I had to do. My family left Honduras when they killed the Sandinistas. We followed a coyote through the dust of Mexico. Every one of them except for me survived, and I am still alive. I was a healer. I was gifted as a girl. I laid hands upon the world. Someone saw me sleeping naked in the noon sun. I heard witchcraft in the whispers, and I knew my time had come. The bastards hung me at the Salem gallows hill, but I am living still.
I was a freedom rider when we thought the South had won. Virginia in the spring of 61. I sat down on the Greyhound that was bound for Mississippi. My mother asked me if that ride was worth my life. And when the shots rang out, I never heard the sound, but I am still around.
And I'll take that ride again and again and again.
That's great.
It really is.
It really is beautiful.
It's interesting that they deal with lots of, you know, those vignettes, which each singer sings separately, cover such a wide variety mm-hmm. in time and timeliness, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. That the Salem witch thing really kind of is like, it was kind of like, wow, I didn't even think about that,
yeah.
you know, about persecution there. What also strikes me is the quality of the recording, the voices individual, and then when they come together, well, I don't know everybody's voice. I can't pick them all out of there, other than I do know the third one was Yola, who's a very fine African-American female country singer
yep.
who's on the rise. I'd heard a lot about, hadn't had time to listen to her, but what I get from this album is when they sing harmonies together, it's just striking.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you made a list here of a whole bunch of supergroups. And Patrick, I'm sure you're familiar with some as well.
Yeah,
so,
I'm familiar with supergroups.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, let's start with that. So, I guess a supergroup is pretty easily defined, right? It's a group made up of band members who had already established themselves either as solo acts or in other bands, right?
Sure. And in some cases, you know, you think these things will work, and sometimes they may not work. And over history, you've seen some that have been great, and then often, you know. As we talked, I mean, when I think of the biggest supergroups, I think of Cream, and I think of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and then Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young. And often, you know, you get personalities are so big, they just can't stick together.
That's always
long.
It. Yeah, exactly right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in a couple of cases like CSN, I mean, they have gone over a long period of time. Like they,
yeah.
that became the core group
exactly.
for those mm-hmm. guys. But a mm-hmm. lot of times they're like sort of one-off side projects.
Yeah, and double, that, yeah.
Like this High Women thing, I think, is that. I'm
right,
not,
right.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of them consider that to be their main focus.
Sure.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash, that became
right.
the primary band yeah. of those guys.
Yeah. Right, totally. And I think with that understanding in place, perhaps, when you get started, probably makes it easier for those egos to know, hey, I just have to get, you know, I just have to deal with this one project. And once we do that, it's going to be a lot of fun and, you know, it won't break down
right.
after that. Right. We don't have to go on tour for 5 years
exactly.
And, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I don't even know. I mean, I'm sure music fans would love to see this group tour.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
I don't know that they will because they're
right.
all so busy on their own
yep. That's
things
the problem.
Going on.
Mm-hmm.
What, The first thing I thought of when I thought of this band, when I knew this was happening, is I thought of the Pistol Annies,
mm-hmm.
which is another group of female country artists, you know, kind of led by, or at least known, the person who's known the most is Miranda Lambert. But that group, which had an album in 2011, also introduced me to Ashley Moore, Ashley Monroe, and the other singer in the band is Angelina Presley.
Mm-hmm.
But they did come together and make two more albums. So it'll be interesting to see if the High Women decide to, you know, they do
yeah.
their own thing for a year or two and go, you know, I have this song that doesn't really work for me, but it sure would work with these four
right.
voices working together.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe you begin to compose because of the way that came together. And that's a great point, Mike, because just looking here, I mean, this basically went to number one on the country chart and also number 10 on the regular Billboard
that's
200.
Awesome.
So this record sold some copies. So that's
I
pretty
had no idea.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
I didn't think to look at that.
Yeah. And that's great. I don't know if it's being played on country radio, but if it isn't, then
well, they're missing out obviously.
That's right. Yeah.
And what's fun about it is that song we heard the track from is kind of has a heavy historic note to it.
Yep.
But there's some funny songs on here that have a sense of humor. Like there's a song called My Name Can't Be Mama
yep.
Today. And there's one like kind of a flip off to an old boyfriend's like, it's called Don't Call Me.
Yep.
You know, so, and that reminded me of the attitude of the Pistol Annies album, you know, so if you haven't listened to those albums, I'd recommend checking them out too. Cause their voices work together well. And Ashley has become a performer in her own right.
Yep.
Since that came out.
Yeah. That's a great shout. I had totally forgotten about that band, but I remember when they were around and getting some praise. Yeah.
The biggest female country supergroup I can remember was when I was younger. It was Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt,
yes.
and Amy Lou Harris came together and put that trio album out. And that, talk about some harmonies there. I went back
man.
And listened to some of that. It's just striking.
Yeah.
With those three, when you put those three voices together.
That's a really good comparison, I think, to the High Women.
Yeah.
For sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a precursor.
Oh, the misery I go through, never knowing what to do. Oh, the pain of loving you. You just can't stand to see me happy. Seems you hurt me all you can. Still I go.
Beautiful.
Hard to turn that off.
Man, it is. It's been a long time since I heard that, but
yeah.
that sounded great.
I love that album. I only became familiar with that album a few years ago. I didn't really
totally forgot
follow that
it.
Kind of music back at that point in time. And it's fantastic.
Oh, man. That sounded so, so good. I got to go back and play that.
Now, I don't know who wrote
So Dolly had a couple songs on
I was
there
gonna say.
And
mm-hmm.
probably never sounded that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
1987.
And they put out at least one more album. Country supergroups are great, but I'm really a rock and roll fan.
Right.
You know, and and I would I think the really the first real super group, I didn't think of Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young as a super group because I wasn't familiar that much with, I mean, to me, the Hollies were okay.
Hollies, Buffalo
Springfield was okay, but they weren't like super giant now.
And the Byrds.
And the
right?
Byrds. Yeah. I mean, the Byrds were probably the most, the band I listened to the most. But yeah, those songs, you know, were just like staples on classic rock radio.
Yeah.
But there were never really, other than Deja Vu, any albums I really just played repeatedly.
Yeah.
But that was a, I just read the biography of the band, you know, a couple months ago, and it was just interesting how, you know, those personalities would clash, and Neil would just maybe show up and maybe not show up, and then some would get bristled and some would not, and how Graham Nash kind of took a lot of stuff from them, just to kind of like a peacemaker kind of situation. So
totally, and Neil would travel separately from the group and stay in a different hotel, just kind of show up when it was time to play.
So
very interesting.
One of my favorite bands, the first album I ever bought was Bad Company, Straight Shooter.
Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I didn't realize, I learned that they really were kind of a super group
on
their
were.
Own.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew about Free
Paul
only
Rogers.
Because of, you know, All Right Now was always on the radio.
Yep.
That was a band that I really liked a lot. You know, their first four albums or so were really great. They were made up by the other guys in the band. Mick Ralphs was from Mott the Hoople, and Boz Burrell was from King Crimson, which I didn't really listen to, but of course I saw their name all the time. I wasn't a big fan of that band. But what was funny was then a few years later, I got to see The Firm, which was kind of one of those super groups.
That's
that
another Firm.
Maybe you might argue didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the record sold well, but I never got to see Led Zeppelin, but I got to see Jimmy Page with Paul Rogers of Bad Company, and I enjoyed that, but I don't think that stood the test of time really well. They put out two albums.
Yeah, I remember the first one definitely sold some copies when it came out.
Yeah. They had a pretty, I don't remember how well this song did, but they had a song that was on the radio at the time called Radioactive.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. If you want to hear a little bit those guys sound like together. A blast of the past.
I'm kind of with you on this. I don't think the album necessarily held up, but this is a good song.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not uptight, not unattractive. Turn me on tonight, 'cause I'm radioactive, radioactive. Well, it's not a fight, and I'm not your captive. Turn me loose tonight, 'cause I'm a radioactive, radioactive. I want to stay with you. I want to play with you, baby. I want to lay with you, and I want you to know. Got to concentrate, don't be distracted. Turn me on
tonight. Cool tune.
That is a cool tune, and I think what really makes it work is the actual sound of the song matches the title.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds radioactive in some way, right?
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like you can't touch it. Stay a little bit away.
That
right?
little scratchy kind of a that scratchy guitar thing. Riff that
and
he that, did, yeah.
And that guitar solo or riff in the middle there, it's kind of jagged, like pointy, right?
Yep,
like,
very neat.
It sounds... kind of otherworldly in a way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it really does.
It's almost like you're hearing it from a sound, that they're in the sound booth and you're hearing it over here, you know?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's definitely not meant to sound like a live performance.
No. And what's cool about that, too, is that it doesn't necessarily play off of like Led Zeppelin and Bad Company forms, you know?
No,
it's
not
a
at
totally
all.
New sound, which is really cool.
It's kind of new wavy.
Yeah,
in
it
a
really
way.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's got a little bit of that Robert Palmer Power Station kind of a mm-hmm. vibe to yeah. the singing too, which is great.
Speaking
yeah.
of super groups,
yeah,
right?
There you go.
At this point, I think Jimmy Page was desperately looking for somebody to collaborate to with, right?
Yeah. Because Robert Plant was out there with his solo albums
That's
and doing
right.
pretty well, Honey Drippers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought of something supergroup related. We got to play a little bit of this, Jim,
okay.
if it's on the Spotify. Do you guys remember there was a collaboration between Jeff Beck, Beck Bogart, and Apice? Do you guys remember this?
What?
Yeah. Check this out. Carmen Apice, and they do, let's see, Tim Bogart was a bass player, Carmen Apice. You got to play their cover of Superstition. Because to me, like when these great musicians get together, what's the first thing they do? But listen to what they do to Superstition. They just fracture this song. It's fantastic.
Who? So it's Jeff Beck.
Jeff Beck. Tim Bogart's a bass player and Carmen Apice is the drummer. So it's just a power trio.
And what were these guys in for something else? Or?
Carmen Apice was in Vanilla Fudge. I know
okay.
that. And I don't know anything about Tim Bogart. But
okay.
Jeff Beck was, you know,
of course,
obviously Yardbirds and,
yeah.
and pretty popular.
All right. Superstition?
Yeah. Listen to it. To me, that's just like the three guys that are great musicians and like really talented. Let's just, do you know Superstition? You know Superstition? Go. And they're just like solos for like 9 minutes.
That's what awesome. Key is it? It doesn't yeah. matter. Just go. Just figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll play some solos. You do it too. Everybody's kind of soloing at the same time on a song.
That was awesome.
Kind of amazing. Yeah.
I had not heard that.
I don't know why that popped into my mind, but it did. I remember I used to throw that cover onto compilation tapes and be like, yeah, check this out. It's real strange. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. You mentioned the Honey Drippers.
Yeah.
That was one of the first albums, which is, I don't know that's really a super group, though. Jeff Beck was on that also.
Yeah, that's true.
And Jimmy Page, I guess, did an uncredited thing on there. But that was when I realized that Robert Plant could sing other than rock.
Right.
You know, because you had these classic songs like Sea of Love and Rockin' at Midnight, mm-hmm. which, of course, I was, let's see, probably 18 or 20 years old at
yep.
the time. Like, that's not what I'm listening to. I'm listening
no, not
to
at
Clash
all.
Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
That was an interesting post Led mm-hmm. Zeppelin compilation, which, you know, obviously Robert Plant's kind of gone all over the place since then and shown that he could obviously be a great solo artist.
Yep.
Whereas Jimmy Page has kind of been producing Led Zeppelin projects.
Right.
He did, I remember he did a concert tour with the Black Crows
yes,
once.
Yes, exactly.
And I think I owned
I just
that
read
somewhere.
About that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More recently, Led Zeppelin related. John Paul Jones was in Them Crooked Vultures
right.
with Josh Homme and Dave
shout.
Kroll, and that
yeah.
was a great album. I haven't mm-hmm. listened to that for a while. Do I have a song from them on there on our playlist? Let's listen to that for a minute.
Thank you.
that's not exactly family friendly or totally accessible to all the major listening audiences, but very infectious to me.
It really is, man. I love listening to Dave Grohl's drumming on that with the little wood block and like cowbell or whatever it is he's hitting there. It's really cool.
That song is called No One Loves Me and Neither Do I. Well, for Dave Grohl, I think doing a supergroup thing makes a lot of sense because it gets him back behind the kit
in
a way that he really can't do anymore with Foo Fighters. And so that's how he can satisfy that.
And I will say this, Jim, you're going to be interested in this. On this album, John Paul Jones is credited with bass, keyboards, piano, guitar, mandolin, violin, backing vocals, and guitar.
Beautiful.
So he fires up that guitar on this record.
I just found, by the way, the Wikipedia page list of musical supergroups, and I am mesmerized
down the rabbit
by this
hole
page now because it's unbelievable. I mean, we could go on for
So before we
100 episodes easily,
before we go down too many more rabbit holes, I think we should talk about at least what I think is the greatest supergroup ever, which is the Traveling Wilburys.
There you go.
Which came at a great time for probably all of these musicians.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff Lynne was kind of wound down ELO and was beginning to become a big producer.
Mm-hmm.
George Harrison was kind of getting a revival with Cloud Nine, which was produced by Jeff Lynne.
Right.
Dylan was kind of in the midst of releasing a lot of albums that weren't really critically engaging or embraced.
Totally agree with that.
Roy Orbison was, I don't know if he was working on this album at that time, but it didn't come out after he passed away.
And that was the biggest surprise that Roy Orbison was part of that, which is amazing. Yeah.
And then obviously Petty was kind of about to go megastar.
That's right.
But you know, to see when I first heard this happening, I think it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this can't really be happening, right?
Right. And you're like, there's no way this will be any good with these guys. And then you're like, holy crap, this is amazing.
Every song they put out, I love.
I mean, you just put that thing on, you can listen to it seamlessly, and you're like, even if you. Like, oh, there's got to be a song on here that's not going to be good. No, it just keeps going.
I was impressed that even Bob Dylan like contributed.
Was so
you
engaged.
Know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's the amazing thing.
Has he written songs for anybody else besides just his solo material?
Other than stuff that he wrote that the band sort of covered.
Right.
That's it. Yeah, but he wasn't writing it for them. He was just writing songs on demos that they heard, or he was making demos with them. So it wasn't like he was writing them for them.
Right.
So that's probably the only time he's ever done that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could ever be a fly on the wall in a room, there has been some video that come out. It's really incredible to hear, you know, to hear like George Harrison talk about whatever. And Tom Petty is really one who would say, well, you know, George just kind of called me up and then called up Bob and then all of a sudden we're together and we made one song and then we decided to make an album. And you're just like, that would be so cool.
Oh, amazing. And I'm sure Dylan, you know, was humbled by Roy Orbison, who was one of his idols.
Right.
You know, he always, you know, wanted to be kind of that rock and roll era singer at the beginning anyway.
That's right. And then to have George Harrison in the group lends it a lot of weight as well.
Yeah.
And he had a great relationship with Tom Petty, so it just sort of all came together, right?
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see what Bob Dylan would have done separately with Jeff Lynne,
well,
if anything.
That's right. Yeah, right. What would have that sounded like?
Yeah.
So let's play this song. People have heard this song. It's the one you selected, and I have a little story.
Great?
Not great, but a little story about it.
We like stories.
Being beat up and battered around, been sent up and I've been shut down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care. Reputation's changeable, situation's tolerable. But baby, you're adorable. Centers and airports, terrorized.
It's a fabulous song.
Oh, it really is, man.
You can't help but smile listening to that. And then when the chorus comes in, you hear Petty and Dylan singing together, you're just like, man, this is awesome. Great.
Well, that's, to me, probably as good an example of supergroup coming together as you'll hear, right? Everybody contributes vocally in their own way. And there's probably a lot of places in there where it shouldn't work, but it totally does. Yep, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Roy
right.
comes in with that mm-hmm. high part. Petty and Dylan, like you mentioned, this kind of ragged thing
going on. Laying on the floor, yeah.
You know? Hey, kick the dog in time for the chorus, will you?
It's so great. Now, although the songwriting is credited to the Traveling Wilburys, it's primarily a George Harrison song. I think he wrote it and then others, you know, sort of contributed to it. But I saw Petty perform this live.
Oh, really? Wow.
On a tour. I saw Petty in the mid-2000s decade. And he played this
I could
song,
see that.
So I thought that was really
great.
That
would be awesome.
That's cool.
And he sang all the parts except for the Roy Orbison part, and somebody else in the band sang that part. But that was really cool. I liked, you know, the song it's just a really good song. It holds up. I think pretty much anybody could sing that song and it would sound good. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the deeper you go, like Mike said on this record, you can find a lot of, you know, really interesting stuff, too. And I believe Jenny Lewis covered this song and a couple of other people, right? So definitely has held up, you know, and kind of extended its life.
I'll just, before you get back into yours, I'll just tell you a quick supergroup story. I'm trying to think if I ever saw any supergroups perform live, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I could go on and on about a lot of these other bands, but I'm trying to pull something from my own personal experience. You know, one band that we had on the show that was a super group was this band called I'm With Her.
Yes.
Speaking of sort of country, Americana kind of super group stuff, those were three singers, Sarah Jarosz, Sarah Watkins, and Aoife O'Donovan. And they've so taken to that little group that they've been on the road for like a couple of years, really touring together.
Right.
And that's really, really great. And I saw them play at Forecastle. You know, sometimes supergroups go bad. Let's just start with that.
Totally.
And one time over 25 years ago, I was assigned as a young journalist to cover a show in Rockford, Illinois by a supergroup. And you can cover your ears if you want.
Okay.
But let me just play a little clip of this.
Okay.
It's a shame I've got to live without you anymore. There's a fire in my heart, a pounding in my brain, it's driving me crazy. We don't need to talk about it anymore. Yesterday is just a memory. Then we close the door. Made one mistake. I didn't know what to say when you called me
All right, do you guys recognize that?
It did. Eventually, the fogged over, what do you want to call it, brain cells woke up to that one. Yes, I do. That was Damn Yankees.
Ah,
right?
Damn Yankees.
Damn
That's
Yankees.
What I thought it was, too.
So, yes, I was assigned to cover that show, and so I became familiar with their catalog at that time.
Did you frame your review of that show?
That's
ticket stub.
Hopefully, that's in a landfill somewhere, but... The members of Damn Yankees were Ted Nugent,
the Nude,
Tommy Shaw from Styx,
oh yeah,
and Jack Blades from Night Ranger made up that band.
Wow.
And here's the funny thing. That album, 1990, self-titled Damn Yankees, was double platinum.
Yeah, it was huge, man.
Double platinum,
yeah, that's
right?
Crazy.
Yeah. That song,
That song got to the top 40, it says. And so did another song on there, which I don't remember. Where Are You Going Now?
I'm looking here. It says it was number 3.
Wow.
High enough. Right? And then they followed up with another album, which I did not even know. In 1992, they had an album called Don't Tread, and that went gold. So,
whoa.
And then that was it. All I know is this wasn't really my kind of music, and it's still not really. But God bless them for doing that, for having success. And I'm just happy that at the particular show I went to, Ted Nugent was not in a loincloth.
Oh,
I
that's report good. That. Yeah, yes. That's always really good.
And he probably wasn't a political commentator at that point either, was he?
I mean, that's sure he had his opinions, but I think at that point he mostly kept them to himself.
Yourself, Nuge.
You know, I think the thing about Nugent, he, you know, obviously came up in the 70s and was known for his guitar playing, but he was never really a singer. He always had others singing, even in a Ted Nugent band and all that kind of stuff. So, again, it's like, he needed to latch onto somebody else.
That's right.
And this was it. But I'm sure, I guarantee, when we were talking about egos being a problem in supergroups,
it may have been the news.
I have to think that was the downfall here, despite their success.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. He once shot me in the back with a crossbow. Tommy Shaw said that once. Yeah,
did he?
No, I don't know.
You know, this is one of those things where it's like, right? I guess Tommy Shaw was, you know, that was that time before Styx kind of became a touring machine and began producing, putting out albums again.
Totally.
You know, I always liked Styx. I saw Ted Nugent a couple times in my young rock and roll career.
Yeah, I saw him once.
Big stadium shows. I saw him in the loincloth do a swinging thing.
Oh, sweet.
He didn't hurt himself.
Yeah. I mean, when you get out there and you're at an arena show and Nuge is cranking up Stranglehold and Cat Scratch Fever and some of those tunes, that's good arena rock and roll, man. Can't beat that. Detroit, man. Yeah.
Yeah. The Motor City Madman, right?
Well, exactly, right.
I don't think people today realize how big he was.
Oh, my God.
For a period of time, he was a big star, right?
Massive. Exactly. Yeah. Double Live Gonzo. I remember buying that. That's a great record. Hey, I will make an argument, and this is another podcast, but I can definitely hear some Nugent influence in the White Stripes. I mean, they're from Detroit, and I definitely think some of that raw rock and roll gets in there a little bit, you know, as long as the Stooges and the MC5 and stuff. But yeah, for sure.
That would make sense.
I just want to say one last thing here. One thing I'm noticing is they put out two albums, but they also curiously have a best of album.
That's always the greatest. Yeah,
they probably had one song that was on a movie soundtrack and they threw it on there, right?
Yeah. For the one new song.
Yeah. You know, we've seen some, you know, small supergroups in concert lately. Filthy Friends
is kind of a
super group, and you know, for some people, you know, with Peter Buck of REM and Corn Tucker of Slater Kinney
I forget.
And the Minus Five,
there you go.
In a way, you know, depending on your musical taste, is kind of a. I mean, they're they're not like a Ted Nugent, Tommy Shaw type level.
But for indie rock, that's a supergroup.
I think indie supergroups is a whole subcategory.
Scott McCoy from Young Fresh Fellows and Mike Mills from REM.
Totally.
And Peter Buck was at that show
too.
I think that Bill Rifflin, who was the drummer, he wasn't in the drummer we saw, but he was the original band member, is now drumming for the new King Crimson, if I remember right.
Interesting.
But yeah, we saw, Jim, you and I went to both those shows.
Yes.
Patrick, did you go to either one of those shows?
No, I did not.
Gotcha. Mm-mm. Well, those were both fun shows.
Yeah.
I had a great time at both those shows.
Well, I will say, too, I will second Jim's emotion. This is how bad it is, folks. I've just bookmarked the Musical Supergroups Wikipedia page. It is quite fascinating. But I think it warrants a mention here to talk about the 1956 session at Sun Studio where Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Johnny Cash all came together. Now, the Million Dollar Quartet was sort of the name, you know, that was given to that, and Sam Phillips had the tapes rolling, but it was not anything that was planned. I think Jerry Lee may have been recording, and Carl Perkins may have been playing with him, and Johnny and Elvis just happened to stop by, or Elvis stopped by, or Johnny called Elvis or something, and they cut a bunch of tunes. There's a CD out there that's pretty fascinating. Just, they don't finish a lot of the tunes, but some of the dialogue between the songs is great. I mean, they play a bunch of Chuck Berry tunes and, you know, they do some gospel stuff. But just to hear those four people together in the studio was kind of an interesting sort of, for a long time, it was a mythical thing.
Like, right.
Did it actually happen?
And it looks like they finally released music in 2006.
Oh, okay. The Complete Million Dollar Quartet. I didn't even know that was out. That's interesting.
Maybe. I don't know.
It's probably everything.
I know it was a long time after that they finally put something out. It was like, you said it was sort of a legendary thing.
Yeah. Sam would always just turn the tapes on. And for a long time, they were, you know, apparently out there. So I think that's a really interesting one. Imagining those four people's, you know, influence on rock and roll. And somebody probably named it the Million Dollar Quartet afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, like you said, we could talk about this forever. There's other semi, you know, super groups that I've followed, like Rockpile, Audioslave, Temple of the Dog. And sometimes I wonder, you know.
Yeah, Audioslave's a good one. Yeah.
You know, do you think Toto is a super group?
See, it's a good question. Asia might fall into the same category.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Asia. Yeah. Oh, Asia is definitely a super group. Yeah, there's a whole Prague supergroup thing, you know, because Emerson, Lake, and Palmer was a semi-supergroup.
That's right.
And then Carl Palmer goes into Asia, which has Steve Howe from Yes, and Guy and John Wetton from King Crimson. And then you have these permutations of Yes that there's like two permutations now. Yeah. You know, it's you could just go crazy following those supergroup paths.
Totally.
The Toto obviously was a group that was super sales and when they got together, but they were session musicians that nobody really knew their names. I mean, unless you were they worked with Steely Dan, Boss Gags, George Benson, and like Michael Jackson,
like the best players. Yeah.
So these guys somehow decided to put their own band together, and since then we've had Africa bored into our brain forever.
Exactly. Thanks, Weezer.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's a really good point. Like, think about, I mean, you could say, okay, Cream was a super group and they got together, but once they got together, it was obviously there was a chemistry and a magic there, so that became kind of a group.
Right.
So is it any longer a super group? It's really, that's kind of, you could argue that's as famous, you know, as what Ginger Baker and Jack Bruce will be known for.
That,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's
a
point where I kind of think, for me at least, it falls outside the definition.
Right.
I think if
that's where it gets tricky.
If it becomes sort of the primary band you know these guys for, I mean, Clapton's a little bit different because he's been in so many different ones.
Right.
But
that's exactly to Mike's point for Toto. That's exactly the same thing.
Well, but I think you have to take back when they formed. We were not, I mean, I was 4 or 5.
Right.
We weren't alive.
Yeah.
You guys weren't alive at that time. John Winter is the one who said they were the first supergroup. Yeah. So he had a perspective of knowing those guys as jazzy, bluesy players. I've never listened to an individual
were
Jack
they
Bruce
with Arthur
song.
Brown or something?
Something like that. Right. And Blind Faith, you know,
after that, you know, Steve Winwood, and Ginger Baker and Clapton formed that afterwards. That's one of those ego things where it only lasted one album. But that album is, I mean, a lot of people say that's the thing that Ginger Baker might be known most for after he passed away. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yep.
Blind Faith, to me, totally fits the definition because you've got Eric Clapton and Steve Winwood who were already established and had hits with other groups. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know about Toto. I mean, Toto is a divisive force of nature depending on your point of view of music.
Well,
but you have to say they definitely became a great sales presence. I bought that first album because that first song, when I heard it on radio, that Hold the Line was just okay, this has great guitar riff. It has piano. Mm-hmm. It's not just pop. It's not just rock. It's more than... So those guys obviously found a way to create some good music.
Totally. 99, another song that was a staple of theirs. Yeah, absolutely.
So...
All right. Well, this is a great topic.
Really good topic.
Definitely. Fun.
Is there a song we should play out with?
I Can't Find My Way Home would be a good one. Or you could say...
The Blind Faith. We just talked about
that.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Okay, great. Perfect. Mm-hmm. All right. We would love to hear other listeners tell us about their favorite supergroups or supergroup stories or experiences or any of that kind of stuff.
Mike may have opened up a can of worms
here. I think there's a lot to explore.
Well, I'm sure we've missed something. That was what my concern was. I'm like, I'm going to miss somebody's favorite supergroup. But, you know, that's okay.
No, there's so many.
For sure.
There are so many.
That. And depending on your definition and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So call 612-440-1984 or email rock@suburbspod.com or comment or message us or whatever you do on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. Also, if you'd like to be a patron of the show and you get to be on the show and pick your topic, we just happen to be doing it in person here with Mike, but we do many of them by phone.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to
do that.
You don't have to come to Northern Virginia to do it.
No, that's right.
We will come to you via technology. But anyway, to do that, you go to Patreon, patreon.com/suburbspod, and all the details are there.
Yep.
All right, here you go. It's Blind Faith. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Mike Schneider.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
You are the reason I've been waiting.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Does Band Aid count as a supergroup?
That would be sort of the biggest supergroup. You know, they didn't really go anywhere, did they?
No, though? they didn't tour.
No follow-up.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing. The video.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, pretty weak, actually.
Well,